connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the
computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hello and welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your guide, Matt Craig, and with me is
Galen Wilson.
Yay! I'm excited because I have a ton of new audio equipment. That was my stimulus check.
I unfortunately had to spend my stimulus check on. Let me check here. The time machine that we use to get these flash games.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like rent and food, which would have been completely understandable.
Oh no, I don't pay rent. I've just been, you know. Listen, I send a physical check to my landlords. They try to cash it. It just bounces, but they haven't noticed yet.
Boing. Where are you getting these rubber checks from? The joke check store?
I send them a can that says all checks in here, and they open it, and it's a bunch of springs that, you know, fly out like snakes.
Yeah. And then they give it to one of their friends, and they're like, hey, look at all these peanuts in here. And they open it, and it's actually peanuts, and they go, wait, I gave you the wrong one. Like, what do you mean the wrong one? These have peanuts. Oh, sorry, those are cashews. Those don't even look like cashews. So
today we didn't have a great intro, but...
Well, yeah. But I was going to say, you know, with this time machine that you've spent your stimulus check on, this time we decided to splurge a bit and grab six-ish separate topics instead of one topic. That's not because we were at a loss to come up with one topic. It's because there are so many good topics that we can't just leave one at that.
Yeah, we wanted to highlight a lot of specific things with this this little month-long journey, but we also wanted to just sort of, you know, talk about stuff that we personally like as well. And so today is just sort of a grab bag of various topics that we enjoyed, especially because Flash was, you know, a big part of our lives.
Right. I should clarify, these are specifically Flash games.
Yeah, not animations.
Right. And these aren't just random other topics, because that's what we do the rest of the episodes in the podcast.
Yeah, we can save talking about, you know, Shrek Retold or whatever for next month when we go back to our silly podcast. But for now, we've got to buckle down and talk about the serious issues.
Yes. And for our first serious issue, we are talking, of course, about a game where monkeys destroy balloons with darts.
Yes, you may know this game. You probably love this game. Interactive Buddy. Now, hold on.
Didn't we do that last week?
Yes, actually, we did. My lawyers have just confirmed that we've actually already talked about Interactive Buddy. So I guess we'd have to talk about Balloons TD5.
Yeah. So, tower defense games, they definitely existed before Flash games were a thing, or at least maybe concurrently. I'm pretty sure they started with Warcraft maps. Don't quote me on that, though. But Flash games definitely had sort of like a tower defense renaissance.
Yeah, the genre of tower defense was, I would argue, kind of defined by Flash games. Not like specifically, you know, only Flash games did it, but the tropes and the general structure you would learn more from Flash games than from other games around this period.
Right. Yeah, Balloons itself actually didn't start as a tower defense game. The first Balloons game in the Balloons series proper was a physics-based game where you throw a dart at a bunch of floating balloons. Sort of a Angry Birds, if you're familiar with it. You know, a little known game called Angry Birds.
Small, obscure indie title, Angry Birds.
Right, yeah. So Balloons Tower Defense is a spin-off of that with a tower defense structure. You still have monkeys throwing darts at balloons. In this case, the monkeys are the towers you place, and they are defending what have you from evil balloons that are attacking you.
Yeah, and the reason that I chose this game, we both kind of chose three topics each, and the reason that I started with this was because, number one, it's a topic that the two of us are very familiar with. This was kind of the Flash game to play when we were in, like, computer class in high school.
I also still play Bloons Tower Defense, just in the Bloons Tower Defense 6 and Bloons Adventure Time Tower Defense iterations. But Bloons Tower Defense 5 is still, like, a pretty all-around good game. I think, so Tower Defense games, you know, the enemies come at you in waves, you place towers that attack them, you get money to build more towers, upgrade your towers, what have you. A lot of Tower Defense games have, like, the ability to place towers in the way of enemies to obstruct them, but Bloons doesn't. It is the path in the buildable area are separate, and so, like, there's less strategy in that regard, but instead a lot of the more specific strategy comes in the sheer variety of, like, types of balloons you have to keep track of, and how a lot of towers have very specific, like, strengths and weaknesses to them.
Yeah. The structure of Bloons TD5 is very similar to any other tower defense you would sort of see, where, you know, you start off with the very low level balloons, which all take basically just one or maybe two pops to fully dissolve. That can easily be dealt with by just your basic single tower. But then, obviously, as the waves progress, you know, you have to start dealing with tougher enemies. But the interesting thing is how everything is coordinated around this little silly theme. So all of the monkeys are kind of, you would understand them sort of immediately if you saw them. There's a glue monkey that shoots glue that slows down balloons. There's a tack, like, you can place tacks onto the track and place a building that builds tacks that, you know, obviously will pop the balloon. But subsequently, the balloons also have, you know, higher levels based on their colors, and the difficulty, or not the difficulty, but the speed is determined by what level of color they are. But then they have, you know, variations, like there's heart-shaped balloons that, if they're not popped soon enough, will actually grow their color back. They have metal balloons that, you know, require specific bomb enemies to pop.
I think what sets Bloons apart from other tower defense games is the fact that the balloons in Bloons, they create more balloons when they pop. Or rather, like, their health is a series of, like, layers. You know, in a lot of tower defense games, an enemy will spawn, and then you attack the enemy, and then you kill the enemy. But oftentimes in Bloons, it's more like you kill the enemy and then a slower enemy spawns, and then a slower enemy spawns. And this this especially is apparent with, like, the Moabs, which I think were in Bloons TD5.
Yes, they were.
Which literally do spawn multiple, like, higher level Bloons after they die once. So it's like, not only do you need damage, but you need multiple sources of damage. Because if you do 100 damage per se, to pull an arbitrary number, to a yellow balloon, then you're not going to destroy it, you're just going to get a green balloon.
Yeah, the levels of various balloons and the ways that they interact is what makes Bloons TD5 such an addicting game. Because, like, any one individual balloon is not an immediate enemy defeat. It's another obstacle.
Yeah, it's about, like, density in a way that's different from other tower defense games. You can't just go tall with a tower, you have to go wide and place multiple towers. And then also, like, there's the camouflage, there's the lead balloons. These things have very specific counterplay, in that you need specific damage types to deal with them. But I think in this case it just helps add, like, variety in planning. Especially, like, if you play on harder difficulties, you will have to plan ahead, like, pretty solidly and have a good idea for your build order.
Yeah, and it also helps that all of the towers can be upgraded, and a lot of the specific tower uses actually can be overlapped with upgrades. So, like, I believe bombs must be used to destroy the metal balloons. However, the tack shooter can be upgraded to have, like, red hot tacks that can actually pop metal balloons. So my favorite strategy was always to just forego the bomb shooters entirely and just, you know, kit out in the front with a bunch of those tack shooters.
The other unique thing about the balloons games is that they have a higher emphasis on economy management. Like, a lot of tower defense games, your only source of income is your towers killing enemies. And so it's like your income is balanced with the game progression directly. But balloons has, like, monkey farmers, which grant you money over the course of the game without doing anything, and you can keep building monkey farmers. And then I know, like, as the series went on, they added more of these effects that just give you money over time. And so there's a real aspect of, like, managing either raw power or economy growth that feels like a board game in a way.
Yeah. I think another interesting thing about Balloons TD5 is that I can't say with TD4, because I never played it that much, but TD5, above all, feels like a modern phone game, which it was made, it wasn't made, you know, terribly, like, it wasn't made terribly far in the past. This was, like, 2015, so, you know, it's not like it was super ahead of its time, but one of the aspects of the menuing is that you have, like, literal dollars, quote unquote, that you can spend on special buildings that are, like, one-time use for a specific scenario, and you can earn those dollars by doing various tower defense courses. You can earn, like, $50 doing an easy course, that sort of thing. And to my knowledge, there isn't a way to actually purchase the dollars with real life dollars, but the mobile gaming aspect of it is, I think, an interesting point in the development of flash games, where after a certain time, that's kind of what they ended up as necessarily. I think I had mentioned, like, The Last Stand in a previous episode, how The Last Stand was a fun little zombie game that had a sequel and then had another sequel that was sort of like a sprawling adventure, but then it eventually had, like, a semi-MMO thing where you could, you know, pop on and play like a isometric shooter sort of thing that had inventory management, but was also, I believe, a, you know, free-to-play, but you could purchase other stuff model.
Yeah, the Balloons Adventure Time definitely has mobile game monetization, more of like a direct gacha system. And then Balloons TD6 also still has that, like, upgrade tree. But I think part of that is that flash games for a while were the acceptable market, sort of, or not acceptable, accessible market. And when mobile games really started taking off, they sort of like, toppled flash games a spot as the most accessible market. And so I think in this case, Ninja Kiwi, is it, that makes the Balloons games?
Yes, yeah, Ninja Kiwi.
I think it was just in their best interest to put it on mobile so they could still have that sort of reach. But then that comes with other problems of monetization and paying for app licenses, so...
Yeah.
Or app store licenses.
This isn't in any way an indictment of Ninja Kiwi, I should mention. Like, this, you know, we can talk philosophically about mobile games and their monetization practices, but I don't mean to say, like, you know, the art died when it got monetized. It's more just, like, it's interesting to see how after a while, near the end of Flash, mobile games or Flash games basically became mobile games.
Right. See also Roblox, which we won't right now, but, you know.
Oh, that'll be a fun episode.
I don't have a whole lot else to say about Bloons, other than the fact that it's very silly, and it likes being silly. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, if you can get it running on the Flashpoint.
Wow, I do not want to hear what Flashpoint is.
Goodness me, no. But if you can get it running on Flashpoint, it's a very fun romp.
Also, Bloons TD6 is also very good, just in general.
Is that on mobile, I assume?
I believe so. It's on Steam. I know that much because I play it on Steam.
Oh, I didn't even know that it was on Steam. That's kind of cool.
All right, so my first pick is a complete opposite direction. It's something that is popular, but it's also super experimental, which the reasons why it's popular are pretty obvious when you get down to it. I am bringing up to the table Quop, Q-W-O-P. Yes. Created by Bennett Foddy, who you may know as the creator of Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy. Quop is a game where you are a sprinter, and your goal is to, like, what is it, 100 yards you have to run?
Yeah, yeah, you have to run 100 yards and do a long jump.
Yeah, and that seems pretty simple. You have unlimited time. Except you are controlling your calves and thighs directly, the muscles, if you will. And so what happens is it is a very simple task, but like takes a Rube Goldbergian amount of effort to actually complete. And this is what Bennett Foddy calls a fumble simulator, a game where the whole point of it is that you fail to do these sort of basic things. Because, like, the very aspect of controlling the character is ridiculously complex.
Quop probably got no small amount of its prominence from the fact that it was a very good, I'm going to say YouTube bait game. And again, I don't mean that derogatorily, but it was a very easy game to pick up if you were starting out as like a YouTube Let's Player, and it got very big on that scene.
Right. It's a game where it's really fun to watch people fail because it's easy to fail in surprising ways, especially if somebody doesn't know what Quop is about before going into it. And then also, it's very, very rewarding when you make that first step or that second step. Like, every like amount of progress you make in the game is like watching a baby crawl for the first time. And I think that is another part of why it's fun to watch, is not only is it funny when you fail, but it's so, so exciting when you succeed.
Yeah, it's very, there's a large social aspect in Quop for such a, you know, small single track game that it sort of transcends the small game that Quop is. And I think, honestly, no small amount of, like, the YouTube focus on various Flash games came from that sort of idea. That sort of, like, very easy to fail, but not too difficult to succeed, and very rewarding when you succeed.
Right. That's also sort of the basis behind why Happy Wheels got really popular. And, of course, that is the basis of how Getting Over It got really popular.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting to me about Quop is it's a good example of how Flash games were an experimental medium for a lot of people. The fact that you could make a small game that's very bite-sized like Quop meant that you could spend some time prototyping or putting together like this idea that's really basic that might not hold its own in a retail game. But then say, here's the game, it's done. There's a lot of these, like, you know, kind of just what if ideas put into practice. And that's really cool to me.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot to say about Quop. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I think that was about it.
Yeah. Quop is also a very fun game. If you like Quop as well and you haven't heard of it, I believe there was also Klop, which was a, I don't know if that was a Bennett Foddy game, but it was a similar idea where you're trying to control a horse.
Bennett Foddy made GURP, where you're a rock climber. And
oh, yeah, that's a fun one.
It's about, like, controlling your grip strength, I believe. So, yeah, that's another example. And then, of course, there's the fumble simulator family of things like Octodad, Surgeon Simulator, and Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
So, on to, speaking of Flash games.
Yeah, speaking of which.
Speaking of Flash games, because these are two games that have pretty much nothing in common. My next game was The Company of Myself. This is a game by 2D Array. He has a real name, but I don't remember it. I think it's Emmett something. But Company of Myself is a fairly simple little platformer. Doesn't take too long. But the crux of it is that it's a little story platformer. And you control a guy in a top hat named John. And you eventually find out the gimmick, which is that press spacebar to end the level, but if you press spacebar before you are at the end of a level, then you create a little ghost of yourself that does every move that you did in the previous game, or in the previous run. Yeah, run is a better word.
Yeah, you're essentially recording your own movements, and then you can physically interact with that clone. You can jump on top of it, and then, or you can have it jump on top of you. It's a puzzle platformer. You know, it's not just about movement, it's about figuring out how to get from point A to point B using the mechanics provided.
Yeah, I think it's, the reason that I picked it is because it is a fun idea that's done better in the next game that we talk about, but it's a fun little concept that I don't think can sustain, like, a massive entire game. I think that there's... The only example I can think of something similar is there was a Portal 2 mod that was like, you know, playing with the time machine where you did kind of exactly this. You recorded your own movements in a Portal 2 environment.
Right. There was a game called The Misadventures of PB Winterbottom, I think it is, that had a similar mechanic. I don't know if it was any good. There's a few puzzles in the Talos Principle that use this mechanic. And then there is an entire section of Braid with a similar mechanic.
Yeah, it's an interesting mechanic that has been done in other ways and has been done better. But the reason that I really like Company of Myself is because the secondary part of it is the little narrative. And the narrative is effectively about how John is kind of like a recluse who literally depends entirely on himself to do everything. He is the company of himself is quite literally, you know, he talks during the game about how he, you know, just gets better at multitasking because he doesn't have anything else. He doesn't have anyone else. And eventually he talks about, you know, the other person, whose name was
Catherine.
Okay.
Catherine with a K and a Y. Take that, Atlas.
You didn't expect the secret third Catherine.
Catherine. who also, this might just be because I was watching the action button video on Final Fantasy VII Remake, but Catherine looks a lot like Aerith to me.
Yeah, she does. She looks a little bit like that too in the sequel to this game that I'll talk about in a second.
Oh, I didn't know there was a sequel.
Yeah.
There's a brief moment where you play as Catherine and John at the same time, switching between them, and then it does a companion cube.
Yep. Yep. Spoiler alert for a 10-minute Flash game, but there's the final level where you play as both John and Catherine. You put Catherine on a pit that John has to press the button to delete under her in order to progress the level.
Yeah. And then as you go, you kind of do a few more difficult puzzles. There's one at the end where that's really cool, where you have to jump into a pit and then jump off clones of yourself as they're falling into the pit.
Yeah.
It's very self-destructive, if you will, to go with the metaphor.
Yeah, it is the best level in the game by far, because it's just a pit and it's just, you know, run across, press jump a whole bunch, and you just have to hope you get to the end of the level, basically.
Right.
And it's it's the moment. The reason that I like this game quite a bit, despite being very small, is just that it ties the narrative and the gameplay together very well, and it's very thematically consistent and thematically good with that little mechanic, especially at the end where, like you said, it's very self-destructive to get a single task done, and it sort of, you know, it tells you as a player what John is like without literally telling you.
Right. Well, then it literally tells you at the end.
Yes.
Where you learn that John is in a mental institute, sort of a mental hospital in like solitary confinement, or he's trying to keep himself in there. And he like completely blocked out from his mind the fact that he killed his girlfriend and buried her remains in a green box, which is why there's a green box at the end of every level.
Yeah.
I really want to bring up Braid. If you're unaware of Braid, it's a 2008 puzzle platformer that released on the Xbox Live Arcade. It is one of the most important indie games for like the shape of indie games in the future, because it was an early example of one that was successfully financially and had like artistic merit. It was somebody trying to make a point and like, you know, make something more than just fun game. And Company of Myself is very similar in tone, in style of like a main character who is an unreliable narrator who did awful things to women and glorifies that even though it's not great. It's a puzzle platformer. It's very surreal and dreamlike. And I don't mean this is a bad thing. I mean this is interesting, because to me it shows that this person was inspired by a game they played to really try it for themselves. You know, they say imitation's the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of what I'm getting at. And the puzzle mechanics are pretty well executed in here. They do a lot of, like, kind of puzzle game design ideas. Like, there is two levels. Well, first, I should mention, there are objects that only the clones can pass through, and only the current one can pass through. And those are used in one level where it's the same layout. It's just, like, platform. Then there is a platform you have to walk across that is either the clones only or John only like surface.
Yeah.
And then there is the ending at the very other side, which has the door or the box. And so for one iteration of this level, you have to give your clone a ride. And then for the other iteration, you have to ride on your clone. But like, reusing the entire level except with one small change is like nowadays a puzzle game staple. Like, that's something you do because it's like smart, I guess I should say. To go into details, you know, would take a bit longer, but it's cool to me that this does those in this small game. Like, there's effort put into it. Or the fact that the main character has this top hat with like a wide brim around it, which makes it look like it's a platform you can jump on. And then he can't jump on top of Catherine's head, but she can jump on top of his because she's not wearing the hat. So like, the character design is also given thought to it to make it mechanically reasonable. And so like, as much as it is sort of a heavily inspired by Braid, it still does a lot of very smart things on its own that makes it feel worthwhile.
Yeah, it's a fun bite-sized look into how Flash games kind of imitated and reflected the like indie landscape as it grew. And it's also just it takes a single idea and runs with basically everything that it can do with that idea. And that's, you know, always a favorite of mine, when just something has a simple concept and then just tries to do everything with it as possible.
Yeah, it doesn't introduce too many mechanics, it seems. It's like there's the different surfaces that only one type can pass through. There's switches that remove blocks, and that's really about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's pretty respectable to me.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
The interesting thing about this as well is that 2D Ray, if you don't have Flashpoint, has actually put his entire collection of Flash games on itch.io. So if you Google it, you can find it, and you can actually find the you can find a couple of other games that I really like This Is a Work of Fiction is a fun little like collection of just tiny mini games, but with a little, you know, conspiracy-esque story behind it. But the company myself has a sequel called, oh goodness, is it Addiction? Oh, I had it written down and I don't know where my notes are. But it's an interesting prequel, actually, I believe, where you play as Catherine, who has a smoking addiction, and the idea of blowing smoke is a big, like, is a mechanic in the game, and it's an interesting little romp. I didn't pick it for this because it's like, it actually has some heft to it. I believe it might be like an hour long, which, you know, isn't that big for like a normal game, but for a Flash game is actually fairly impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Company Myself sounded interesting in any way, then check out 2D Array's other work, because they're quite interesting.
All right. This game I actually didn't learn about until recently, but it's funny because we chose our games mostly independently of each other. We didn't go out of our way to not have overlap. So this game that I'm choosing here as my second game actually overlapped with Company of Myself quite a bit. This is the game Cursor 10, with like a little star at the between the R and the 1.
Yeah.
Might be Cursor times 10? I'm not exactly sure on the
pronunciation.
But it was released in 08 by Neko Games. And what it is it is you control your mouse cursor going up through like this tower. It's very minimalist. You'll keep going up, clicking on like stairs to ascend. And then eventually there's a room with a button. And when you click the button, a staircase appears. But when you move off the button, the staircase disappears. And then you realize that there's a timer running. And when the timer ends, you restart the run, but your other cursor is still moving. So this is that same recording inputs and playing back mechanic. But so Cursor 10 is very simple and very quick. The sort of main idea is just that as you play, you'll kind of catch on to how you can quickly go up the tower, as well as where you'll need to use your cursors. And then once you get to the top, there's this giant pyramid that you click on to finish the game. There are also many smaller pyramids throughout the tower that you click on to get bonus points. And what's funny is I didn't realize those actually did that until I already finished the game once. I thought they were like spikes that you had to avoid. So I was like going way too slowly during the early parts of the game to actually like get to where I needed to be.
Yeah, I did not realize that they were things you could click on for something alternate. So I had also been like snaking my mouse around the entire time.
Yeah. So I think what's really cool about Cursor 10 is it has a lot of replayability built into the game, because you only have like 12 or so tries, like 12 or so lives before the game ends. And if you don't get to the very top, then you messed up, I guess.
Yeah.
But that means that if you like mess up the first time and you get a game over, now that you know sort of what's going on, you can go through those earlier floors much quicker and plan ahead. And then also, once you learn that the pyramid is actually points, you can try to like have the first cursor go on the button for only a certain amount of time, and then try to clean up the rest of the pyramids down there. You know, you can kind of strategize your timing a little bit. It's worth noting that to get to the top floor, you need 4 buttons held on separate floors. So, like, you really have to plan ahead, but you actually, most of the planning that's, like, how much time do I have to spend on the button versus getting points doesn't matter until you've played the game once, if you will.
Yeah, it's the interesting thing about Cursor 10 is that by the time you're at the top in general and realize, you know, what you have to do to finish the game, you still have probably half of your lives. So it's not the sort of thing where, like, your first run is just kind of a whiff. Your first run is just going to, you know, you're going to just fail and then you're going to learn. It's the kind of thing where all of the learning can happen in one life and then you're, or one run, and then your second run can be perfecting that.
I think what's really cool in this case is it's a pretty complete idea itself, but it uses the score mechanic in a pretty traditional way of just encouraging replayability. But I feel like this is a game that I'm more interested in, like, boosting my score versus something like Kitten Cannon or something, because I feel like I have a lot more input into it, if you will. And it's not just, like, doing something infinitely. I can sort of strategize over where I'll spend what time, and so it becomes almost a puzzle versus, like, a test of endurance or a test of reflexes.
Yeah, it's slightly different from a lot of other Flash games, especially around the 08 era, where the ability to score points is based very directly on your skill, and so it's the kind of game that you can speed run, basically. It's the kind of game that, you know, you can directly influence in a way that you couldn't with sort of sillier Flash games. And it's just, it's such a neat little minimalist idea.
Yeah, it's also that you're literally controlling a mouse cursor. It's like there's no character that you're moving. There's very little aesthetics at all. It does just enough.
And I think that might be just enough talking about it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a smaller game, but I would honestly say, of the entire list, that one's probably the second one you're going to want to play. The first one is probably going to be the one we talk about last.
Yeah. But now, your number three.
Yes, my number three. So, this one is also a mostly narrative little romp. It's called Heir. Heir as in, like, heir to the throne. H-E-I-R. Not heir as in... And I believe it was an Armor Games game specifically, but it's 2D Shadow of the Colossus. It's a little Shadow of the Colossus like with three colossi and a fun little story as well. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, basically, when you start the game, you're this little guy on a cliff and you move to the right and you jump off. And as you're jumping off, the camera kind of zooms out and shows that you're jumping way, 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 way down. And eventually you hit a bit of water and you start climbing on some rock, except that the rock is definitely belonging to something that's alive. And as you're climbing around it, you know, climbing up on vines, dodging spikes or whatever, eventually you hit some moving parts that look like they're alive. And then eventually, once you hit a certain area, which I believe is like a leap of faith, the camera zooms out again and shows that you're scaling a living thing. And it's just a little platforming adventure to get to a certain spot, but it's contextualized as you're scaling this massive creature in order to slay it.
It's like the entire level is this one moving object, and so it'll like move up and down or it'll sway side to side, and that affects sort of the positions of the platforms.
One of
my favorites is the last one you fight starts in the water, and so there's like this whole breathing mechanic that you have to manage, and then as you get far enough it flies out of the water and you're suddenly suspended in midair.
Yeah. What's also interesting with that is that in the water, the mechanics are also a lot floatier, And so while you have to manage your air, it's also a little more forgiving with the platforming. But then once you get back up above ground, it, you know, obviously is back to regular gravity. And so the platforming is harder, quote unquote, only as hard as it was before. But like, it's an interesting recontextualization.
Yeah, it's not the same. It doesn't do everything Shadow of the Colossus does. Like, there's no combat. There's no moving between the colossi. There's less of like a variety, but the three it has do the sort of concept of climbing on a creature pretty well. It is funny though, like when I first started playing, it felt really wobbly because obviously the creature was moving, and it reminded me of like Monkey Ball, where the level moves when you move.
Yeah, the gravity is very relative in the game, and it's very... It is the kind of thing that you could easily get, you know, a little confused with, because like gravity is kind of what you've most recently landed on in terms of relativity. So right. Like the way that you have to position yourself and think about how everything works is a little bit ever changing throughout the level.
Yeah. My one sort of problem was that there is an ability to zoom out to see what's near you, but you can't really look at the entire monster whenever you want, which oftentimes led to me kind of forgetting it was a creature of some sort, and it just started to feel more like a level.
Yeah.
As much as I liked the final enemy, I couldn't tell what it was supposed to be until I got to the very top and, like, killed it.
Yeah. So, this is my third game, but I would say that of the ones I chose, it's definitely not my favorite. I like it for what it is, but I will say that there are a few points that kind of like, for one thing, the story is that the heir, the guy you're playing as, is a pale man from the north, and a king is having his kingdom besieged by these three monsters, and he's on his deathbed with no heir. So he says, anyone who slays the beasts will be my heir. Who cares? And the pale man from the north is like, I'll do it. And
the king's advisors are racist, and they're like, you really want this person to be your heir?
And the king is like, hey, you know what? Fuck it.
But then you kill all three beasts, and you go up to the king, and the king says, I'll never let a pale man from the north be my heir. And he throws a sword at you. And you die.
He says, over my dead body.
Yeah.
And he kicks you out a window also. Very, right. Very Fable 2.
Right.
The story, I mean, it's a good, justification for, you know, having a game. But, like, I will say that the whole, like, twist ending very much kind of felt like, Shadow of the Colossus had a twist sad ending, so we should have a twist sad ending too, without sort of thinking about why. Like, the why is the sort of really big important thing about Shadow of the Colossus.
It reminds me of, like, I don't know, the type of thing that would end up on, like, Game Theory as, like, the true ending behind it. It reminds me of Inception, that's what it is. Where, like, it feels like an ending that is meant to be open for the sake of being open. And granted, Inception has reasons why it being open fits with that story, don't get me wrong, but like in this case it feels like they wanted to have an open ending so that you could think about what it was supposed to be. I don't know if the three cutscenes or so was enough time to get invested in the story to make you want to think about what the ending was supposed to be. I do commend that they were able to do so in three cutscenes.
Yeah.
It's like, was it like the monsters were cursing the king and he was sick, but once you killed them, he got better? Was it like he was pretending to be dying so that he could get whoever to kill the monsters for him? But I don't...
Was he actually dying and he, you know, was literally just sort of... You know, he would literally let his kingdom die than let a pale man from the north run it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does all those, but I don't know. I think, like, the hour or so I spent on this game wasn't enough to make me care that much about it. yeah, as much as a game like Filament. But that being said, it was still a decent game. The cutscenes have like a comic style where like panels of the comic get added in as the cutscene progresses, sort of like Elite Beat Agents, if you've seen that. And I think that works really well for Flash games, because like it doesn't really care about the sort of low fidelity of the animations, I guess. You can make these short illustrations and piece them together with a moving comic, and like it'll look pretty decent.
Yeah, the game, the reason that I like the game is because it's making, as I kind of keep saying, it's making something with very limited resources, and it's something that I really like. Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games. And so, like, trying, the fact that somebody tried to make, and in some way succeeded in making, a sort of demake of Shadow of the Colossus in Flash, even though it's only three Colossi, even though it's really short, even though the story is kind of crap a little bit, in my opinion, it's something so commendable in like the scope of what it's trying to get, what it's trying to convey, and what it's trying to make, that I've never forgotten it, even after, you know, the 10 years or whatever it came out ago.
Yeah.
So
for the last topic, this is more of a game series, but they're very small games, but they're very interesting. These are, I think personally, my favorite Flash games are from this series. This is the Grow series, created by Eizmaze/Ohn Nakayama. Eizmaze is Eizmaze. The creator actually has a Twitter where he's been posting about his recovery from some sort of surgery. I hope he gets, you know, I hope he survives, because I love these games.
Yeah.
So the Grow games are, you have usually a sphere. In one of them, there's a cube. In one of them, it's just a flat plane. But you have sort of a space, and then you have these objects you add to the space. And whenever you add an object, all existing objects level up. They grow in different ways. It's kind of hard to describe just verbally, but like, so for example, in Grow Cube, you can place the people object, which adds people. And then when you place another object, there'll be two people instead of one. And then when you place another, there'll be four people, and then the four people start working. Or there's like a pipe object. And when you place the pipe, it's just like one segment of pipe. But as you place more objects, the pipe expands and gets longer, and then it cuts inside the cube, and so forth. You can place these in any order, but there's only one order that actually wins the game, quote-unquote. So it's sort of this puzzle where you have to pay attention to what the maximum level of each object is, and pay attention to how they interact. The way the objects interact kind of gets more important as the series goes on. An example would be, like, in Grow 3, there is a propeller and there's a tornado. And if the propeller is not at a high enough level by the time the tornado reaches level 3, the tornado will blow past the propeller and break the propeller. So, like, when you see that happen, that's your cue that you have to have the propeller a high enough level by the time the tornado levels up for it to work.
Yeah. I really liked the Grow series, and I would say that if there's anything that you play of this list, it should be the Grow series. It's very, the earlier ones are very abstract. And I honestly, like, to be quite honest, I would say that my least favorite ones are kind of the earlier ones where it's very abstract. I was, however, really, really interested in the Island and Valley games and the RPG one. Because they have a lot more concrete themes. So, like, the RPG one, you have, like, a demon at the top and a little warrior at the bottom. And you have to place these various little RPG systems into the world in order to ideally level up the guy and then probably defeat the demon.
Right, yeah. And the systems include things like there's like a forest where it starts with one tree and then it grows bigger and bigger. There's a lake. There's a little tower of enemies. Every time you finish placing all the objects, you get to watch the hero go through every little place you add. And so if you get the forest to the high enough level, you'll probably see the hero go in and buy a sword from the worker there. So like, you know that, oh, if I get the hero to this level, then they'll do that. And then maybe you'll notice that if you get the mountain to a high enough level, there's a giant boulder. And so you try to find the object that gives the hero a bomb.
Yeah.
I think Grow RPG is one of the easier ones to sort of puzzle out how to complete it based on, like, interactions. And there's a pretty good amount of, like, objects that have a maximum level that's easy to notice. Whereas games like Grow 3, I think, is one of the hardest ones because it's very abstract and there's a lot of small interactions between the objects that you need to pay attention to, and there are a lot of objects with maximum levels that are hard to keep track of. Grow Island and Grow Valley were made for, I want to say, a school? Like a technical school or like a college or something? I'm not sure specifically because it's in Japanese, but in both of them, everything you place is a different form of science or technology. So like, instead of placing a cube in a sphere, you place chemistry, biology, engineering, civil engineering, architecture, and you watch people implement those into the island or valley.
Yeah.
One thing I love about these is they're very charming. There's a lot of characters that appear throughout all of the different Grow games. There is like this little goblin kid. There is these like one-eyed sort of small alien looking things. And then of course, even just the way that the creator draws people is pretty charming. They sort of look like bathroom symbols, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, they're cute little like meeple-y looking people.
Yeah, meeple people.
Yeah, there's a lot of personality with them too, because like one of my favorite ones is in Grow Valley, I don't remember who it is.
I think it's the architect if it's the one I'm thinking of.
It's a little guy who like basically is at a desk for most of it.
Yes.
Where like, yeah, you click on him and he kind of like scouts out the valley if he's early enough, and he's like, ooh, I have an idea. And then he's at a desk. And, you know, every time you sort of click another person, when it comes back to him, he's like, you know, writing. And then he's like, you know, stressed out. But then eventually he's like, I've made a breakthrough.
Yeah. And then like he gets like a headband on and he just starts, there's like fire around him because he's so passionate.
Yeah.
Grow Valley also has one of my favorite details where when you add somebody, or like when they go to do something, they do all these backflips to get onto the island from like the icon below.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these small, quick animations that play out, but are like either pretty funny or just charming in their own right. Like you said, yeah. They have a lot of personality.
Yeah. Valley is also probably my favorite because like every interaction can interact with everybody previously. Like when you click one person, it's not just that individual person eventually levels up. It's that like once you click another person, suddenly every other previous person you've clicked has a chance to, you know, build off of the foundation that has been built with their interaction and with another person. So like the like technology person or the telecommunications person, you click on them and their first interaction is they give everybody like a cell phone, and then I think if you click like the mechanical engineering person after two other people, then you'll build like a little a car, I think.
Yeah. And then the the telecommunications person will come out and be like, you know what this car needs? An antenna on it. Or the biologist will tell the mechanical engineer to make like a robot that looks like a mole or a robot that looks like a dragonfly, because the biologist will see an insect or a mole and be like, ooh, this gives me an idea.
Yeah. There's like a, one of them places down a sign that another one can then, I think like take that as the opportunity to build a, city around, I believe. Yeah.
It's worth noting that Grow Valley, Grow Island, and Grow 3 all have secret endings. I don't remember them off the top of my head. Grow 3 gives you hints towards the secret ending. I don't remember if Grow Island and Valley really have much in the way of hints. But they're still pretty good. I think one cool thing is that there's like this puzzle box aspect of like complexity just sort of evolves as it goes on. Everything seems pretty basic at the start, or you might not even know what they're supposed to be. But then as you place objects and like they start to grow and evolve, they get more complex. They do all these things. You become more intimate with them. And then like towards the late game, there's all these interactions going on. There's all these things leveling up. So it really ramps on in like the flashingness as you go through the game. But it has that aspect of like at the start, everything is so foreign and different. And then you slowly just kind of work out how it all fits together.
Yeah. I also quite love about some of them as well is that some of them are very obvious a little bit when you've like made progress. So like Grow Cube, the first two steps are like you place down a human and then you place down water, because when you place down human, the very next thing that they do is dig if there is water. And then if you do another step, then you will know that it's the correct one when the humans sort of interact with it, you know. But if they don't really interact with it, or if one of them, you know, stops prematurely seemingly, then you kind of know, oh, I'm missing a step here. But with some of the other ones, it's a little bit staggered. So like with Grow Valley, there's, you know, the mechanical engineer can build a car if you click him like early. But if you have the mechanical engineer and like a telecommunications guy and something else, they don't build a car. They build like a little UFO.
Yeah.
So like it has some mutual exclusivity.
Right.
That sort of tells that like doesn't exactly 100% points to what you're supposed to do.
Right. I think if you want to play the Grow games, which I highly, highly recommend, I think the best sort of order, if you will, is Cube, Island, RPG, Valley 3, something like that. Maybe Cube, RPG, Island, Valley 3.
Yeah.
3 being yeah. just really hard, and only play it if you're into the concept of Grow. There's also Grow Tower is pretty good. Grow Cannon is pretty good. Those are like smaller ones. And then I do like Grow Park, which is really different in the way its sort of progression and endings work. There isn't like a true ending and a fake ending, but instead, depending on the order you place everything, you'll get different end screens with different like characters showing up. And it's almost a Pokemon style, like get every character in the game. And some of them are pretty well hidden, and you have to really piece together the interactions to make it work.
That's really interesting.
But like it teases at the characters with little silhouettes. So you'll see a silhouette of Pac-Man and be like, how in the world do I make Pac-Man appear? And the secret is you just experiment things.
Yeah, Grow is definitely the one you should probably start with. I would definitely say Grow Cube, because it's abstract, but it's not so abstract as to be. It's not Grow 3.
Yeah,
where like it's so abstract that you might be lost. It's abstract, but you will still be able to like look at it and go, oh, they're building this. I should probably have this, or I should have placed this earlier.
Right. If you play Grow 3, I almost recommend doing it with a guide anyways, just so you can see sort of all the animations happen. It's pretty fun. It's one where, like, every starting object is super abstract, because as it goes on, it'll actually get in more definition. So, like, one of them is, like, a pipe, and then you place it, and, like, you have no idea what the pipe does until, like, two things later, where it makes bubbles. And then you're like, oh, that's not just a pipe, it's a bubble pipe. Or there's a sphere that grows, and then it becomes a sun. But at the start of it, you really only know it as a sphere, or the cube that grows more cubes and then makes a robot. Basically, all of them are like super abstract, but then they gain definition as it goes. So after you've played through it once, you'll be like, that's not just the cube, that's the robot cube.
Yeah.
But that also makes it kind of confusing and head scratchy. I do want to mention that the creator of Grow still makes Grow games, but they are switching to HTML5, I believe. They have some of them ported to mobile as well, like Grow Cube, I think, is on Android, and I think Grow 3 is as well, but not all of them are ported, but their website is still up, and that has links to all of their, like, official ports of the games.
Yeah. It's good to see a creator trying to preserve their work after, you know, Flash clearly doesn't and can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Grow series is very good. Do you have any, like, very small last minute recommendations before we wrap up?
Off of what we talked about, not particularly. The creator of Grow has an adventure game called Chronon that's really, really difficult because it's like this weird time travel-y game, but I recommend it anyways. See how much you want to play around with it. It's pretty clever at times. If yeah. not, just try it and then watch a solution and see your mind blown, because it's, like I said, pretty clever.
Yeah. I believe that there's a game called, like, One Shot, where the whole idea was that it's a little story that you only have one chance to get the good ending for, or get any ending for, which was a fun little experiment.
Are we talking about the same One Shot? The one that's, like, pretty popular in fandom circles with the cat boy?
No.
Oh, well then.
Probably not.
The other game One Shot is pretty good. I want to mention there's a recent game that came out that I don't think is made in Flash because it still runs. But it is very much a love letter to Flash games, which is Friday Night Funkin'.
Yeah, it's Friday Night Funkin'.
It's a rhythm game, kind of like a mix between Parappa and DDR, where you press arrow keys along with the beat, but, like, the person you're fighting against, quote-unquote, will show you what to do first, and you copy them. But it has, yeah. like, it has one character you fight is two characters from Sir Pello's series.
The Spookies.
The Spookies, yeah. And then another one is just Pyko from Newgrounds.
Yeah, it's still getting continually updated, too.
Yeah.
There's also, like, a really big modding scene and, like, custom song scene.
It kind of exploded in popularity in the last month, but I really recommend it as, like, a farewell in a way. Its music is super good for a rhythm game that's important, but, like, the animation feels like an old Flash game, but, like, given a bit of an edge. It's like, you know how games nowadays with pixel art aren't actually graphics you would see on the Super Nintendo, but they are stylized to look like that? That is what Friday Night Funkin' feels. It's not Flash game graphics, but it's stylized to look like Flash game graphics.
Yeah, it's a good send-off, a good capstone of the Flash era, and it's also just a fun game otherwise.
And we hope that this podcast can also be a good send-off in a way. Hence the Jan eulogy.
Yes. Thank you very much for joining us. I have been Galen.
And I have been Matt.
You can please follow us next week. Oh, wait, yes, sorry. Yeah. You have to follow us first.
Plugs. You can follow us on social media at NetSurferPro on Facebook and Twitter. You can, you know, tell us how our episodes are, maybe recommend things for future episodes. I think we have a pretty wide library of things we can cover, but I'm all ears. As in, I'm covered in ears. It really hurts to listen to things.
Yeah, Matt is actually a biblical angel. We've been kind of hiding it.
Biblical angels also exploding in popularity recently. And sea shanties. Yes. We need a biblical angel singing sea shanties in Friday Night Funkin'. Puzzle solved.
We got it.
We got it. You can follow me if you want to hear more funny jokes like that on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. You can follow my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/twack. Hitman 3 is coming out this week, so I will be streaming that because it's a fun series. And you can follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/IEatAtSonic. That's IEatAtSonic, where I post video essays, which I will resume doing now that I have all this audio equipment.
Yes, you should absolutely check that out. Video essays are obviously a very fun, kind of also growing in popularity. I'd say they're probably already popular anyway.
8 years.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Galen Wilson. That's Galen Wilson with a zero as the O in Wilson. You can probably find me on Twitch at a Machine Gun Vampire, spelled how it sounds. No spaces or anything. I don't know if I'm going to start streaming sometime soon, but I might. And with that, please join us next week for our very special
next Sunday
for our very special final episode of this Janulogy. And if you'll excuse us, I think we have to go check some emails.
See ya.